everybody, and welcome to the Silp Near Pool. I'm Diana.
I'm Andrew.
And we are a podcast for the in-depth and semi-serious discussion of the young adult sci-fi book series, Animorphs. In case this is your first time reading the Animorphs, we divide our show into a spoiler-free and spoiler-intensive section. This week, what are we reading?
We're reading Animorphs number 9, The Secret, a Cassie book.
Nice. That is very appropriate. And the cover has Cassie morphing into a wolf. Wolf, mm-hmm. Right. For some reason, I thought it was skunk, but it's wolf. Also, just to set the tone, do you know when this book came out?
1997?
Yes, July 1997.
Yes. July.
What a fun-filled summer.
Yeah.
I was two. Just turned two, actually. And K.A. Applegate was churning out some more Animorphs books. And the number one song was I'll Be Missing You, which I think
was
the one from last time.
Yeah.
So
it kind of shows how fast she's writing these books.
She's a machine. Did she actually write this one? Or was she a ghost? Was this a ghostwriter?
She wrote this one.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what I thought. Yeah, it just shows you how popular Puff Daddy was,
mm-hmm.
or how prolific Kay Applegate was.
I think she is very prolific.
Or both. So yes, the year is 1997. Cassie is morphing animals. And did you want to say anything else about the cover?
No.
All right. Then maybe we should just jump right in.
Yeah. So we start with Cassie is working on a project with rats. She's trying to get her rat to go through a maze. And in order to figure out why it's not going through a maze, she decides to morph rat. This is kind of the typical...
Yeah, they always have an opener.
Morphing in their personal lives. Kind of cold open.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I think we sort of have a formula for Animorphs books, mm-hmm. at this point, and they often have this like, oh, we'll morph an animal for our own convenience. We never do this.
Yeah,
but this
Jake
time,
says not to.
We will. So they do. It's kind of cute. They, I think they like foil some bullies too. Mm-hmm. They save this girl from being like harassed, I guess, and like chase off some rascals. Anyway.
So after that, we get to the main action where they're meeting in the barn as per usual. As the other members of the Animorphs arrive, Cassie sort of gives the normal expository description.
Yeah. That's Axe. He's an Andalite. Yeah. That's Jake. He's dreamy.
You know, I like him, as in.
Yeah, so we get introduced to all the characters. They're talking about, I think it's Tobias has seen some people in the forest, and he doesn't like that they're logging. And I think they start to get suspicious that it is Yerkes.
Yeah. Due to the force field that he noticed in the air surrounding the logging camp.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. So Tobias has seen this force field. They think it might be some Yerk business. They decide to get some intel. And so they like split up into teams. So Cassie ends up with Marco morphing wolves.
So they scope out the logging camp, then I guess they set off sort of the perimeter security, and then they get shot at, and then Marco gets trapped under a net, but luckily Axe cuts him out just in the nick of time. So realize at this point that this is no... For sure, the Yerkes are running this logging camp, and they suspect it's to essentially, like, burn the Andalites out of their habitat, as the Yerkes still think that the Animorphs are the Andalite bandits.
They find the camp. They get shot at with dragon beams. Axe saves Marco. And then they sort of get back to, I guess, back to the barn.
So then back at the barn, they debrief. And they're sort of deciding about what to do about the logging camp. And then there's a discussion between Cassie and Marco where they have different ideas about whether or not it's worth stopping a logging operation just because it's a logging operation.
Oh, yeah, right. Because Cassie is like, she kind of gets on her, I mean, I love Cassie, but she gets on her high horse about, like, well, even if this wasn't about the Yerkes, they still shouldn't be doing this because it's bad for the environment. They're destroying an ecosystem. And Marco's like,
what? I don't care.
Cassie, we're not here for this, which I was going to ask you. So when it comes to conflict resolution, so mm-hmm. Jake steps in and is like, well, it seems to me like it doesn't really matter, you know, what our personal motivations are, because we all want the same thing. We want to stop this logging operation. So, like, we can all be on the same page about that. And Cassie doesn't really like that because she feels like she is being dismissed for mm-hmm. her point about the environment. And so I was just curious, when it comes to these sort of debates, do you consider yourself to be more of a Jake, or more of a Cassie, or perhaps a Marco?
Yeah, I'm with Jake on this one. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Cassie. And also sorry, Marco. I feel like they're sort of equally dismissed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you feel like it's more about the, like, actionable items.
Yeah. And they need actionable items.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, yeah, I have been told in the past that I'm action-oriented.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to, like, motivationally oriented, or... Is that what you're sort of thinking of the difference?
I don't know. I guess I don't know what the alternative is. I've just been told that I'm action-oriented.
All right.
Which, I think Jake's point is that, like, we need to stop this logging operation either way. So let's, no use kind of arguing about what our ethical compasses mm-hmm. tell us. But I don't know. I also sort of do identify with Cassie a little bit. Just in that I can understand feeling like it's about the principle of a thing, and it's, like, really important to me mm-hmm. that other people share my, like, values. I don't know. In this case, it's kind of time sensitive anyway, so I'd like to think that I'd be a little more of a Jake, I guess. Mm-hmm. But we sort of start, throughout this book, you start thinking about the, like...
The thorny ethical problems.
Yeah, and, like, is it quote-unquote worth... doing something that's going to have that's going to be a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. So with this in mind, Cassie now helps her dad pick up a wounded skunk who was wounded by the dragon beams. So during this, she's sort of thinking to herself about what they just discussed. I also thought that this was a nice dad moment. As he's taking her to the skunk, he's like, careful. People drive like maniacs through here. I just think that's a really
I think at the very beginning of the conversation, Cassie's, like, worried because she's getting home really late. She's like, am I going to be in trouble? And her dad says something like, oh, yeah, this is, I've been waiting for you. This is really important. We have some really important things going on. There's a certain animal that was mm-hmm. injured. And Cassie's like, all right, dad, like, I know. Because apparently she's sort of a skunk whisperer in the family.
Right.
I don't know why that struck, like, why that struck me as being such a dad way of going about it, but I just really, mm-hmm. I thought that was cute. Anyway, so they have this little adventure where they go to rescue the skunk who has a suspiciously round burn from the dragon beam. And then I guess everybody...
meets up at the mall.
Yeah. So we go back to kind of the main plot. And somehow they've decided that I think Cassie suggested, like, morphing something really small to get through the force field.
So then they had the horrible experience with ants where they morphed ants from a different colony.
Yeah, I can't believe they're going to morph termites at this point. They're like, yeah, what could go wrong?
No, it's from the same colony. It'll be great. But this is a terrible idea.
Like, the whole issue with the ants, I mean, yes, there is that war, but it's also just being taken over by the hive mind.
Right.
Yes. Which, like, that definitely won't happen now as we morph another species that forms colonies that are dominated by one queen. So Cassie's worried about this, understandably, in my opinion.
Yep. Everyone's like, great.
Yeah, nobody is happy about it. I still think there was probably a better species that could have morphed, but whatever. We sort of... throughout this book, we're kind of going back and forth between this, like, we're going to morph termite and, like, try to take down the logging operation thing. And then also this skunk storyline.
Equally important.
Also important. I love this skunk storyline.
I mean, I guess the question is whether it is equally important is central to the book.
Yeah, well, and I think part of the whole ethical or like inner monologue that Cassie is having is how important is the skunk family. But so she's kind of having this whole, yeah, inner dilemma, and she decides that she's going to acquire the skunk. So I guess this is when she does that.
Yeah. And as her father pointed out that there were skunk babies out in the woods somewhere. And then
right,
she was like, are they big enough to survive on their own? He's like, maybe.
Which is honestly, like, doesn't she know how this works at this point? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing is, like, clearly skunk babies that aren't protected by their mother get eaten all the time.
Yeah, and this isn't the first time she's thinking about it.
Yeah, but for some reason it's this skunk.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's more like...
fine.
As we see in this book, I think it's more like she is starting to feel kind of out of control. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, all right, now I'm going to try to do what I can for these skunks. Whereas, you know, obviously this is not the first time that they've been in a situation where they rescue an animal and it might have babies out there or something.
Right.
So I think it's more about her mental space that she's in.
Mm-hmm. So then they decide to go in at night. So they morph owl, which are good morphs in the nighttime because they have excellent night vision. And then they draw straws for who's going to distract the Yerks, and it ends up being Jake. And the rest of them are going to go termite to get into the logging camp.
Right. And more Cassie dilemmas. But like as they're flying to the logging camp in owl morph, Cassie is trying to take a mental note of where mm-hmm. the skunk kits are because she knows that the owl has good eyesight, and also owls are natural predators of skunks, and so she knows that the owl will be able to find.
Yeah.
It's kind of trippy.
I think a lot of things are natural predators of abandoned skunk
baby skunks. Yeah, but owls too. So anyway, I was just thinking that just in general, it is cool that Cassie has the bandwidth. Or seems to have the bandwidth to be, like, multitasking at a time like this, you know? Because mm-hmm. I don't think we have seen other characters, like, doing something quite like this, where they, like, they're doing the mission just, like, with everybody else, but they're also mm-hmm. sort of separately juggling other responsibilities. Anyway, so she's morphing an owl. They get to the force field, they morph termites, Jake hangs back to distract the Yerks.
And then, predictably, they get taken over by the termite hive mind.
Of course they do, yeah.
We saw that one coming.
Yeah.
This is really good, like, horror, like, scary writing, you know? Like, when I was reading this, it was, like, kind of creeping me out a little bit.
Yeah, well...
the strategic use of, like, italics...
I was reading PDF, so mine might have been different from yours.
Yeah, okay.
I was thinking, though, that it's interesting. It's cool that we can have basically the same broad concept happen twice with morphing ants and morphing termites,
mm-hmm.
but they're totally different experiences, and they read differently, too. And I think part of that was that when they initially morph termites, it's like, oh, there's just no, like, it's empty, it's fine, everything's totally cool. And then you have this false sense of security, mm-hmm. and then it just gradually starts to take over as they get closer to the hive.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree. I think in particular the description of the termite queen as they're like, in the termite hive, walking around, like, blindly following her orders, it makes you think of, like, a larger-than-human-sized termite queen, because they are termite-sized.
Yeah.
Which is really creepy.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That is creepy. I also thought that the way that she, like, tricked herself into killing the termite queen, it all happened really fast, I gotta say. It was like mm-hmm. a couple lines, but she, because I read it over multiple times to be like, wow, that is really all she wrote. But Cassie just kind of wills herself into thinking that the termite queen is an ant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she's like, okay, I'm gonna kill the ant, which I thought was very smart, but also like that seems hard, you know, that seems hard to do. And I was impressed that she was able to do that.
Yeah.
Just like with her. I mean,
like we talked about, she might be uniquely sort of.
Yeah.
Able to like manipulate or channel, I guess, the instincts of the morph as opposed to just fighting them.
Right. She sort of synergized with the termite instincts as opposed to fighting them and conquering them and being like, okay, now I'm Cassie.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, let's use the termite hatred of ants.
And after she does it, she's really messed up and she starts just demorphing inside the wood of the building until Axe like cuts her out with his tail blade.
Yeah, I was going to ask because, you know, so Cassie kind of goes
wacko.
Goes wacko, loony.
Marco says.
But I was curious what your thoughts were on like what was it about this experience that made her specifically have such a strong reaction. I mean, and everybody kind of said different things
that was messed up
that alluded to the fact that they're all having nightmares too and they all hated it too, but like Cassie was the one that started literally screaming as they're inside the logging base.
I was thinking it's sort of again the same thing. She's more of a termite, so she's mm-hmm. like a termite who just had her queen killed. And like maybe she's suffering like the fact that the termite killed the termite queen on like a termite level.
Yeah.
So that's sort of like bringing her some psychological grief. And then I think also there's her Cassie complex about like killing things.
Yeah. They didn't like directly say it in this book, but obviously she is so empathetic. And it's possible that it hit her harder. Also, I guess I hadn't really thought about it, but she is the one that did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas everybody else, I guess I'm not really sure what their sensory experience was like of what happened.
Yeah.
But
at least they managed to make it out of the wood. And then so as she's screaming, Rachel just immediately like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Puts her hand over her mouth. And then Cassie is just crying, and then Rachel starts stroking Cassie's hair.
There's a lot of, like, mother-child stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, Cassie said that the termite queen sort of felt like it was her mother's voice calling to her, and then she also says that, like, Rachel was acting like her mother, stroking her hair. Mm-hmm. There's the skunk mother, obviously.
Right.
We don't actually really get interaction with Cassie's mother.
Yeah.
And then that night, Cassie has a dream that she is a mother searching for her babies.
Yeah.
Which while I was reading it, I was like, oh, she's thinking that she's the skunk. Or
is she the termite?
Yeah, she could be the termite. Yeah, I didn't think about that. So I guess it's kind of like, why do we care so much about our allyship with the skunk mother, but we're so fine with severing the ties mm-hmm. between the termite mother and her babies?
So after they get home and she goes to sleep and has that nightmare about being a mother searching for babies, she tries to decompress during the day, although it's not really working. And then she goes with Tobias to find the baby skunks she noticed.
Yeah, and this is this whole thing where like she and Tobias are having this conversation about like...
How many baby skunks are there? Well, there's four now.
Yeah, yeah. But then Tobias is like, all right, you know, ultimately ends up helping Cassie save the skunks. And is also like, why do I care so much about these individual skunk babies? You know, and sort of later, Tobias is having this conversation where it's like, well, a hawk deserves to live just as much as a skunk deserves to live. So like, what's...
Possibly more. Let's not offend the skunk fans out there, though.
So after that kind of tizzy with Tobias, they go over to the baby skunks. Cassie morphs the mother skunk and sort of takes care of the babies and ends up falling asleep with them.
Which is
frowned upon.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a 2-hour nap limit, you really don't want to oversleep your alarm.
Nice.
All right.
No, it's true. And then So she, like, is jolted awake by Jake being like, Cassie,
what the fuck?
You are about to get stuck at Morph.
Yeah.
And
if
I
this,
guess
if this book were aimed at an older audience, Jake would have totally dropped the F-bomb here.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I was about to as I was reading it.
And then it's Jake and Cassie's turn to have an ethical discussion. Mm-hmm. And I thought this conversation in particular was interesting because Cassie sort of brings up the fact that when she was a termite, she reacted to a situation in a way that ended up killing the whole termite colony because she killed the queen. And so the colony is going to die. And so in that way, she feels like she's similar to the Yerkes because, you know, they didn't belong in the termite colony in the first place. Like they just went in for their own personal gain. And then they ended up like destroying it.
Mm-hmm.
And she starts getting into this question of, you know, why are we so convinced that the Yerkes are the bad guys? Like humans have been winning, quote unquote, for so long. Like maybe it's just our turn to lose against another species. And like, why do we think, why do we just assume that we're the good guys basically?
I mean,
that's one of the things that I like about the Animorphs is that they start to ask questions like that.
No, it's easy to make a caricature of like the bad guys from outer space. And, you know, at a certain level, they are evil slugs from outer space.
On a literal level, they are evil slugs from outer space.
But Cassie is calling into question that assumption.
Yeah. But anyway, the upshot of this whole conversation is that somehow everybody decides that they're going to make a plan to help Cassie save the skunk babies because it's going to be, I think, like 2 or 3 days, and then the mom's going to be healed enough to go back to join them. Yeah. But so they just need to, like, make sure that the babies stay alive until then.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all, the whole gang is together. Marco is, like, cracking some jokes. There's kind of more introspection on, I guess, why they're doing this. But everyone seems down.
Yeah. No, they're her friends. So I guess, you know, at a certain level, if she, you know, feels like it's important, all they have to do is morph a skunk mom, you know?
Yeah.
He's not asking them to go termite.
I was also thinking that it's just cool that, I mean, in real life, Cassie gets a lot of flack from Animorphs fans for being kind of a sap.
For initiating Operation Save the Skunk.
Yeah, but...
And stuff like that.
And so on. But in the book, in the world of the Animorphs, I really like that. I was sort of thinking about it, and, you know, she's 20%, 15% of the team.
More or less at different points in time, yeah.
Depending on, you know, which book you're in. And so I was thinking, you know, they really do work with her. And, like, if there's something like this that only she cares about, like, sure, one out of every 5 or 6 missions, maybe they do something where they all take turns morphing skunks and saving skunks just because, like, even though Marco feels like it's not going to be worth anything in the end, and Jake kind of seems like he feels that way too, but they're like, Cassie's part of the team, Cassie wants to do this, so we're going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, and Jake says, like, we need you. He was like, yeah, we are an army which has exactly 6 members, so you can't... this is when he was scolding her for almost becoming a skunk Nothlet.
Right, right. But I think that they sort of... They all see Jake as a leader type, and so Jake easily could have been like, Cassie, we're not doing this. Like, stop it. Cut it out. We have to deal with this other thing. And he did do that a little bit. But I also felt like he could have just left it at that, and instead they kind of all rallied around her. And I just thought that was really, like, it was heartwarming. Yeah. It was nice.
Yeah. So as Cassie is taking the skunk kits out for a walk, Jake and Homer, his dog, roll up and Homer gets sprayed. But Jake informs her that Ferrand, who has the deciding vote on the commission, which will say whether or not the Yerkes can continue logging, is coming to the camp early to inspect it. And so they hatch a plan to just grab him before the Yurks are able to infest him.
This whole plan seemed a little bit hastily thrown together, which I guess it necessary. Is. Yeah, it was hastily thrown together. But like, you know, they don't know. Maybe Ferrand has already been made into a controller. Even if he hasn't, it's like, I guess we just need to stop them from doing that. But in any case, they just, once they find out that he's coming early, it's like, all right, we just have to run.
And then, so there's a little before action. I think this is sort of a trope, but a philosophical conversation between Cassie and Tobias.
It's always Tobias. It's like whoever the narrator is and Tobias have a conversation as they're on their way.
Yeah. And he's always like a good, like it happened last book, right?
Yeah, it did, right? Yeah.
When they're flying to the observatory. So, I mean, he's a really good foil, I guess.
I mean, Tobias is just awesome and he doesn't get as many books as everybody else.
Yeah. But yeah, I also think that sort of like, it is a trope of like two soldiers on the eve of battle, like talking about different philosophical topics.
What do you talk about when you're on your way to possible death?
Right. Well, I guess you talk about Mother Nature.
Yeah. And Tobias just is a good character to be having this conversation with because they are sort of talking about, this is where Cassie brings up, like, why, how is it possible that Tobias can, it is implied, eat a skunk baby, but then the next day help save the other ones? And, you know, is it even any better morally to bring him frozen food that came from an animal,
right?
Just further upstream, like, and then Tobias is thinking. Tobias also says he's thinking through the morality of killing other animals, and he's thinking like, well, it can't be bad for me to eat because I have to live. And I think maybe if I were killing a bunch of animals wildly and then not eating them, that would probably be morally worse, but I have no reason to think that some other animal, like if I kill a, let's say a skunk, I have no reason to think that that skunk had more, was more deserving of life than I am. And so it's hard to put a value on that. And Tobias is also pretty understanding of like, it's hard. Like he was like, I don't know.
It's tough. No, he is. He's good to talk to you, like you said.
Yeah.
So then the fight breaks out. They're trying to keep Ferrand from being infested. And I think Cassie is knocked unconscious.
She gets shot and then kind of passes out.
I see.
She gets shot in the wing.
And then she awakens, like, trapped with Ferrand in, like, Yurk custody while there's a standoff between the rest of the Animorphs and the Yurk forces.
Which brings us to a trope that has been recurring in a few Animorphs books, which is one of the Animorphs gets trapped in some kind of box that easily could have been transparent, but somehow isn't. And so they can, like, morph and stuff inside this box, and it's totally fine.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I was like, wow, what if this had been a glass box? That would have been bad.
Yeah. Well, she lucked out.
This one even had holes in it, so I was like, she could just morph, like, a well, not an ant or a termite, but something small and, like, crawl out.
Yeah.
She'd probably morph a flea.
So, but in this standoff, she morphs Skunk, communicates with Visser 3, and threatens to kill Ferrand. And then Visser 3, opens the box, and then she, as the Skunk, sprays him, which basically single-handedly wins the battle. So there you have it.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. I do love how in this book we had a very strong undercurrent of the skunk storyline. So then it just feels so, so nicely tied together when she morphs.
Does it?
Skunk.
Does it?
Does it not to you?
Well, we can discuss this in like the after action, but,
all right. I thought it was awesome.
So Axe, like negotiates Ferrand's release to where he will presumably, you know, bar the Yurks from logging ever again in exchange for the unique technology to eliminate the skunk smell. Then we get the usual denouement where Cassie and Jake are talking about the same questions that we've, you know, raised throughout the book. Like, are humans different than animals? Are we the good guys and bad guys? Are predator and prey? And then we also learn that Axe told Visser 3 to use grape juice instead of tomato juice.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Which is thought to
That was so funny. I loved that. I think that's one of my favorite endings to any of these books.
Wow, that's interesting.
It's so funny. It's so great. I'm serious.
No, I know you are.
In that deep conversation between Jake and Cassie, Jake also brings up a point that hasn't been discussed yet in her deep conversations, which is that humans save other species.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes. So his point is that since humans save other species, maybe we have a little bit of like moral high ground.
Mm-hmm.
I guess like we should care about humans, about saving humans, because humans save other species.
Mm-hmm.
Although doesn't that in itself seem like kind of a human centric?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's sort of a new take on human elitism, because we were talking about, we're previously talking about human exceptionalism, where humans have the most diverse flora and fauna on their world. They're like uniquely stubborn, etc. But here we're talking about how humans are superior to animals. We're sort of drawing a distinction between...
Well, and yurks. Because it's also like what makes us different from other species.
Yeah. Jake is solidly in the yurks are your evil slugs.
Yeah, and he has to be, because he has to be able to feel okay about trying to kill them.
So, did you have any thoughts on the book as a whole? I have some questions for you.
Oh my gosh. Wow, we're already at the end of the book. The book as a whole, this one, for some reason, I really felt connected the first time I read this book as I was reading it. Mm-hmm. I think maybe because it's like pretty self-contained, like it doesn't reference things that have happened in previous books.
Mm-hmm.
And
it is. Yeah, that's sort of an appeal of it being sort of like a monster of the week type thing.
Yeah, yeah. And so like my reactions to a lot of the things that were happening were like not contingent on things that I know about the rest of the series. So it was very reminiscent of the first time that I read it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, one of the things that came out of that was I just like remembered how much fun it was to read for the first time. I think I also just have kind of a soft spot for like clever ways of winning a fight that are not just
fighting good.
Yeah, like punching hard. And so the skunk thing, I just really liked the whole ending of that climactic battle.
So it's not like too out there. Like Visser 3 is like a big bad villain who's been built up through, you know, the previous 8 books and 1 Megamorphs. Do you think that it sort of lessens his position as the primary bad guy, or makes the series like too silly that they just spray him with skunk spray and win?
Oh, I really wasn't even reading it as like silly in a diminutive way. Maybe part of it is because Cassie already sprayed Homer, and so we got like Axe's reaction to the smell, and he like could not handle it. And so we kind of already established that it is a big deal. And I felt like, I don't know, maybe I suspended my disbelief because, you know, I know it's a book.
I think that it requires some of that.
Yeah, but I felt like, you know, they're saying that Visser 3 has never experienced this before, and so he has no idea what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was sort of taking that at face value rather than seeing it as, like, him not living up to the expectation of him.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that this didn't really seem like a high-stakes operation, because it sounded like the whole point of the Yurk plan was to drive out the Andalites from this place.
Yeah.
And it wasn't part of their, like, master plan to take over Earth.
Right.
And, like, the whole catching the Andalite bandits sort of side plot for the Yerkes is a side thing.
Plot for the Yerkes.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know. I was seeing it more as, okay, the Yerkes just aren't investing that much in this. And so they're just going to be, they're just going to let this go since it clearly didn't work. I don't know. But it sounds like you felt like it was a letdown.
Well, I think that part of the greatness of the Animorphs is the sort of wide range of tone it has. And so, you know, we've talked a lot about the sort of like gritty ethical problems, but I also have to remember that like just silly idiot teenagers with the death wish is like, is within the range of the Animorphs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, so it's not always this sort of action beat required like some of the like, some buy-in for me, if that makes sense, like some suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that you have, like, this book series has been a part of your life for longer than me, and I think that you have spent more, like, time and emotional investment on the Animorphs than I have. And
I'd say too much.
So I feel like, you know, if I read an Animorphs book and it's lighthearted and funny and silly, I'm like, that's awesome. Like, nice. But for you, you might think of the Animorphs as, like, a heavier series than I do.
Right.
Just
I'm tempted to, but in this book and other books are, like, reminders that the Animorphs is also has, like, a sort of silly mission of the week vibe.
Did we call this a Ken Skip book?
I think we didn't, but we should have.
Yeah, I think it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not necessary to the series. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I wanted to point out the whole tomato juice thing is sadly a myth.
Yeah. Is that real? Okay.
Yeah. So the compounds that are responsible for skunk scent are various thiols, which makes sense.
Of course.
Right. So they're molecules which have a carbon bonded to a sulfur bond to hydrogen, and that we think it persists for so long because some of the thiols exist as thioacetates, which get hydrolyzed to the thiols in water. So they're sort of the smell lingers, I guess.
Wouldn't that mean that if you can just rinse yourself in water for like very thoroughly for like hours, that would help get rid of the
smell? It will help, but it will also convert some of the thioacetates to thiols, which are responsible for the smell. In any case, the best remedy would be like some sort of oxidizing agent to take them to the sulfonic acids.
Yeah, but you don't want to put an oxidizing agent on your skin.
I mean, you might. Yeah, I don't know if that was particularly enlightening. But
do you have any other thoughts about the book as a whole?
No, I mean, I thought the thiol thing, right?
If not, then does that mean we should move on to our close read?
Yeah, I guess so. Let's do it.
All right. What number are we generating today?
So we need a random number between 1 and 158. So as a reminder, we choose a page of the book at random, and then we choose non-randomly a passage from that page to do a close reading of. And we'll do that first in the context of the series that we've read so far, and then we'll move to somewhere.
The context of the series as a whole? Oh, the spoiler zone!
Perfect.
You almost got me there. You almost got me. The number is 92.
Oh gosh.
Oh my god.
Would you like to do a dramatic reading?
Sure. My own body motored away on its six legs, I fell in step behind two workers. Each was carrying one of the gooey, precious eggs. I had to protect them. There might be enemies. We walked along the grotesque length of the queen, toward her head.
Thank you.
Of course.
So, This is when Cassie is in Termite Morph, approaching the Termite Queen.
So maybe this paragraph is a few sentences, so maybe we could go sentence by sentence.
Sure. Okay. My own body motored away on its six legs. Motored is interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting because she says my own body, but the way that...
My own body, it's...
Yeah, like the way that the sentence works makes it feel like it's operating on its own.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's motoring away on its six legs as opposed mm-hmm. to me doing something.
Yeah, this whole paragraph is written in the voice of a termite, the termite that Cassie morphed.
Mhm. Mm-hmm.
So, I fell in step behind two workers. So in step, there's your...
Right. Although now she's in a more active voice because I...
Yeah.
I did it, but what I did was I fell in step. So it's still... And,
but now the I is the termite mm-hmm. I. So maybe my own body and then it motored away. And then that's her like losing control of her, I guess.
Yeah.
Consciousness or decision making.
Mm-hmm.
I fell in step behind two workers. Instep reminds me of, like, marching, you know? A la, like, military parades.
Like, in time.
Which she is a soldier termite, I guess.
Oh, yeah, good point.
So there's kind of,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, like, the warlike type thing going on.
Yeah, so she's a soldier and they're workers, but they're from the same colony.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Each was carrying one of the gooey, precious eggs.
That is so interesting.
That is so gross.
Gooey, precious eggs.
I guess I've never handled, like...
Termite eggs?
A termite egg. Specifically a termite egg, like...
Yeah, why are they gooey? Scale.
I don't know. That's terrible.
What's the goo?
Ugh. But that's they're terrible. Precious. That kind of reminds me of, like, the precious.
I know, and I really never use the word precious.
Mm-hmm.
And so it always just makes me think of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, Hobbit. That's fair. I think it's like an interesting sort of two words to use in conjunction.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
like gooey, you know, it's like, that's like kind of Nickelodeon-esque, you know?
Yeah.
And like the precious eggs is, I don't know, just a different, you know?
Yeah, they're just words with very different subtexts.
Exactly, yeah. There you go. I had to protect them. There might be enemies.
Yeah, that was... So she switches to these short sentences, like very direct sentences,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was kind of a signal that she's really thinking as the termite here. Mm-hmm. Like, I had to protect them. There might be enemies. Mm-hmm. It feels like she's saying the thoughts that are being put in her mind by the queen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I feel like it also ramps up, like, the pace or intensity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, when you start with, like, long, flowing sentences and they get gradually shorter, mm-hmm. shorter, shorter, you know, it sort of heightens everything because it's eventually going to come to a climax later on the next page. Where she's basically narrating her thoughts in, like, almost single words at a time at points.
Yeah.
So we're definitely building up to that climactic part of the action. Maybe even the climactic part of the book. Although, that's hard to say.
No, I don't think it's the climactic part of the book.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Well, yeah.
The later battle.
But that later battle definitely felt less intense to me.
Interesting.
Like that felt like we were spraying skunk scent at somebody.
Really? I mean, obviously that is what happened, but you're saying that's less intense.
Yeah, for me, it was definitely less intense. This is like the most, I don't know, the most charged or like grueling part of the book.
I mean, I felt like this was definitely charged, but it happened so quickly that it almost felt anticlimactic to me, this scene. Just because we'd already done ants and like, I don't know, it really takes like a sentence for her to get the termite queen. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I also thought that the sentence, "there might be enemies," reminded me of how Cassie keeps describing the messages that she's getting as a termite as vague.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was just really interesting from the standpoint of like how we are representing the termite colony and like how it functions. Like, she describes the way that they pass food to each other, and then the food contains hormonal messages. Mm-hmm. And I should have looked it up. I don't know how much understanding there is of like how termites communicate, but she emphasizes over and over again that the messages are vague. And so, we know, and she explains to us, I think in the next paragraph, that ants are an enemy of termites, but right now, as she's narrating the termites' thoughts, she's just saying there might be enemies in a less specific way.
Yeah. No, the sort of voice of the termite itself and then the voice of the termite queen are like very, and then Cassie's voice are all sort of competing in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It also makes me think about, we sort of said that, you know, humans are, or we drew a distinction between humans and like animals. Humans have the capacity to protect other species, but the way that the termite queen is voiced is like very sentient.
Yeah.
You know, it gives like, it's, I feel like the way that instincts are often described is like, I felt fear, or I felt confident, or I felt, I could hear really well. But these are more abstract thoughts than that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, so it almost portrays the termite queen as like having intelligence comparable to a human.
And Cassie feels like the termite queen is her mom.
Yeah.
You know, which is very different.
Yeah.
Than like seeing something as your mom is very different than seeing it as a set of instinctive emotions.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. We walked along the grotesque length of the queen. I just think that sentence is cool.
It is cool. Yeah. It really makes me think of a larger than human sized termite queen, which is, like I said, not awesome to think about.
Yeah. And grotesque is just such an illustrative word.
Yeah. I think it's doing a lot of work there.
Yeah.
I also wonder if it's like the surge of adjectives like gooey and precious, grotesque, are like so specific, you know? I wonder if they're like insertions of Cassie's voice into the voice of the termite, right? Because you wouldn't think of a termite.
Yeah, definitely grotesque. A termite wouldn't think of the length of the queen as grotesque. They would just think of it as normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's like an interesting...
And then the last sentence of this paragraph is just toward her head. Which, to your point about like sentences becoming shorter, we're starting to... This is before we even have the thought of destroying the queen. So it's not like Cassie's moving in for that, but it's just you get this heightened sense of action.
Yes,
once you realize that they're going towards the queen's head. Also, it's just gross, like, to imagine.
Ugh, the grotesque length.
Yeah, and you're getting near the head of the termite queen. Like, I do not want to be there.
Ugh.
So, yeah, definitely painting a picture for me, and I don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a good passage.
Yeah.
Do you have any other thoughts about this passage in the context of the series so far?
I do not. Do you?
I
it's just so good.
Is it time for the spoiler zone?
I think so.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I guess we'll bid goodbye to our unspoiled audience.
Yeah, yeah, you gotta get out of here before you get spoiled. Which is to say, this concludes the spoiler-free section of our show. Thank you for listening, and join us next time as we read...
Animorphs number 10, The Android.
And in our professional opinion, this is going to be a...
must-read book.
Must-read book. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You can contact us at sulpniarpool@gmail.com. That's sulpniarpool@gmail.com. Or you can visit our website, sulpniarpool.com. You can also tweet at us. We have a Twitter. We have a Facebook. We have Tumblr. We have Reddit links. All of these are on the website, but our username is at sulpniarpool. Again, sulpniarpool. We also maintain a Spotify playlist with all of the songs that we've mentioned on the show so far, which you can find on our website for some 90s nostalgia. So long, and until next time, don't soak your skunk sprays in grape juice.
All right. Thank you.
All right, bye guys, get out of here. See you next time.